Osho, a bird on the wing, talks on Zen. Discourse number 2, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
For one, the student Dilko came to the master and said, "In what state of mind should I seek the truth?" The master replied, "There is no mind, so you cannot put it in any state. And there is no truth, so you cannot seek it." Dilko said, "If there is no mind and no truth, why do all these students gather before you every day to study?" The master replied, "But I haven't been to room here, so how could monks gather? And I have no tongue, so how could I teach?" "How can you lie like this?" said Dilko. "But if I have no tongue, how can I lie?" replied the master. Dilko said sadly, "I cannot follow you. I cannot understand you." The master said, "I cannot understand myself."
Yes. Life is such a mystery. No one can understand it. And one who claims that he understands it is simply ignorant. He is not aware what he is saying, what nonsense he is talking. If you are wise, this will be the first realization that life cannot be understood. Understanding is impossible. Only this much can be understood, that understanding is impossible. That's what this beautiful Zen anecdote says. The master says, "I don't understand it myself." If you go and ask the enlightened ones, this will be the answer. But if you go and ask the unenlightened ones, they will give you many answers. They will propose many doctrines. They will try to solve the mystery which cannot be solved. It is not a riddle. A riddle can be solved. A mystery is insoluble by its very nature. There is no way to solve it. Socrates says that when I was young, I thought I know much. When I became old, ripe in wisdom, I came to understand that I know nothing. It is reported of one of the Sufi masters, Zunnath, that he was working with a new young man. The young man was not aware of Junnat's inner wisdom. And Junnat lived such an ordinary life that it needed very penetrating eyes to realize that you are near a Buddha. He worked like an ordinary laborer. And only those who had eyes will realize. To realize a Buddha is very easy. He is sitting under the Bodhi tree. Luminous. To realize Zunnath is very difficult. He is working like a laborer, not sitting under a Bodhi tree. In every way, absolutely ordinary. One young man was working with him. and that young man was continuously showing his knowledgeability. So whatsoever Junnat will do, he will say, this is wrong. This can be done in this way. It will be better. About everything, he knew. Finally, Junnat laughed and said, young man, I am not so young to know so much. This is really something. He said, I am not so young to know so much. Only a young man can be so foolish, so unexperienced. Right is Socrates when he says, when I was young, I knew too much. When I became ripened, experienced, I came to realize only one thing, that I am absolutely ignorant. Life is a mystery means it cannot be solved. And when all efforts to solve it prove futile, the mystery dawns upon you. Then the doors are open. Then you are invited. As a knower, nobody enters the divine. As a child, ignorant, not knowing at all, the mystery embraces you. With a knowing mind, you are clever, not innocent. And innocence is the door. Right is the Zen master when he says, I don't understand it myself. Very deep, really deep, the deepest answer possible. But this is the last part of the anecdote. Start from the very beginning. The disciple comes to the master and says, in what state of mind I should seek the truth? The master says, there is no mind, so there cannot be any state of mind. Mind is the illusory, that which is not, but appears, and appears so much that you think you are the mind. Mind is Maya. Mind is just a dream. Mind is just a projection. A soap bubble, nothing in it, but appears. A soap bubble floating in a river. Just the sun is rising, and the rays penetrate the bubble, and a rainbow is created, and nothing there in it. When you touch the bubble, it is broken, everything disappears, the rainbow, the beauty, and nothing is left, only emptiness becomes one with the infinite emptiness. Just a wall was there, a bubble wall. Your mind is just a bubble wall, inside your emptiness, outside my emptiness, and just a bubble, prick it, and the mind disappears. The master says, there is no mind. What type of state you are asking? Difficult to understand. People come to me and they say, we would like to attain a silent state of mind. They think that mind can be silent. Mind can never be silent. Mind means the turmoil, the illness, the dis-ease. Mind means the tense. the anguished state. Mind cannot be silent. When there is silence, there is no mind. When silence comes, mind disappears. When mind is there, silence is no more. So there cannot be any silent mind. Just there cannot be any healthy disease. How can it be possible? Is it possible to have a healthy disease? When health is there, disease disappears. Silence is the inner health. Mind is the inner disease. Inner disturbance, so there cannot be any silent mind. And this disciple is asking, what type, what sort, what state of mind I should achieve? Point blank, the master says, there is no mind, so you cannot achieve any state. So please drop this illusion. Don't try to achieve any state in the illusion. As if you are thinking to travel on the rainbow. And you ask me what steps we should take to travel on the rainbow. I will tell you there is no rainbow. Rainbow is just an appearance. So no steps can be taken. The rainbow simply appears, it is not there. It is not a reality. It is a false interpretation of the reality. Mind is not your reality. It is a false interpretation. You are not mind. You have never been mind. You can never be mind. And that is your problem, because you have become identified with something which is not. You are like a beggar who believes that he has a kingdom. Now he is so much worried about the kingdom, how to manage it, how to govern it, how to prevent anarchy. And there is no kingdom, but he is worried. Chuang Tse once dreamt that he has become a butterfly in his dream. In the morning he was very much depressed. His friends asked, "What has happened? We have never seen you so much depressed." Chuang Tse said, "I am in a puzzle. I am at a loss. I cannot understand. In the night, while asleep, I dreamed that I have become a butterfly." So the friends laughed that nobody is ever disturbed by dreams when you are awake. The dream has disappeared, so why you are disturbed? Chuang Tse said, that is not the point. If Chuang Tse can become a butterfly in the dream, then now I am puzzled. It is possible that now the butterfly has gone to sleep and is dreaming that she has become Chuang Tse. If Chuang Tse can become butterfly in a dream, why not the otherwise? The butterfly can dream and become Chuang Tse. So what is real? Whether Chuang Tse dreamed he has become a butterfly, or butterfly is dreaming that she has become Chuang Tse? So what is real? Rainbows are there. You can become a butterfly in the dream. You have become a mind in this bigger dream you call life. When you awaken, you don't achieve an awakened state of mind. You achieve a no state of mind, you achieve no mind. What this no mind means? Difficult to follow, but sometimes unknowingly, accidentally, you have achieved it. You may not have recognized it. sometimes just sitting idly, not doing anything. There is no thought in the mind. When there is no thought, where is the mind? When there is no thought, there is no mind. Because mind is just the process of thinking. It is not a substance. It is just a procession. You are here. I can say a crowd is here. But is there really something like a crowd? Is crowd substantial? Are only individuals are there? By and by individuals will go away. Then will there be crowd left behind? When individuals have gone, there is no crowd. Mind is just like crowd. Thoughts are the individuals. Because thoughts are there, continuous, you think the process is substantial. Drop each individual thought. Finally, nothing is left. There is no mind as such. Only thinking. But thoughts are moving so fast that between two thoughts you cannot see the interval. But the interval is always there, and that interval is you. In that interval, there is neither Chvantase nor the butterfly. Because butterfly is also a sort of mind. Chvantase is also a sort of mind. Butterfly is a different combination of thoughts. Chvantase, again a different combination of thoughts, but both are minds. When mind is not there, who are you? Chvantase or a butterfly? None. And what is the state? Are you in an enlightened state of mind? If you think that you are in an enlightened state of mind, this is again a thought. And when thought is there, you are not. This is again, if you feel I am a Buddha, this is a thought. The mind has entered. Now the process is there. Again the sky is clouded and the blueness is lost. And the infinite blueness no more can be seen. Between two thoughts, try to be alert. Look into the intervals, the space between. You will see no mind. And that is your nature, because thoughts come and go. They are accidental. That inner space always remains. Clouds will gather and go, disappear. They are accidental, but the sky remains. You are the sky. Once it happened, a seeker came to Bayazid, one Sufi mystic. And the seeker asked, Master, I am a very angry person. Anger happens to me very easily. I become really mad. And I do things I cannot even believe later on that I can do such things. I am not in my senses. So how to drop this anger? How to overcome it? How to control it? Bayazid took the head of the disciple in his hands, looked into his eyes. The disciple became a little uneasy. And Bayazid said, where is that anger? I would like to see into it. The disciple laughed uneasily. He said, right now I am not angry. Sometimes it happens. So Bayazid said, that which happens sometimes cannot be your nature. It is accident. It comes and goes. It is like clouds. So why be worried about the clouds? think of the sky, which is always there. This is the definition of the Atma, the sky, which is always there. And all that comes and goes is irrelevant. Don't be bothered by it. It is just a smoke. The sky that remains eternally there never changes, never becomes different. Between two thoughts, drop into it. Between two thoughts, it is always there. Look into it, and suddenly you will realize you are in no mind. The master is right, he says, there is no mind, so there cannot be any state of mind. What nonsense you are talking. But the nonsense has its own logic. If you think that you have a mind, you will start of thinking in terms of states, ignorant state of the mind, enlightened state of the mind, disturbed state of the mind, silent state of the mind. Once you accept mind, the illusory, then you are bound to go on dividing it. And once you accept the mind is there, you will start seeking something or other. Mind can exist only if you continuously seek something. Why? Because seeking is desire. Seeking is moving into the future. Seeking creates dream. So somebody is seeking power, politics. Somebody is seeking riches, kingdoms. And then somebody is seeking the truth. But the seeking is there. And seeking is the problem, not what you are seeking. The object is never the problem. Any object will do. Mind can hang with any object. Any excuse is enough for it to exist. The master says there is no state of mind because there is no mind. And there is no truth. So what you are talking? There can be no seeking. This is one of the greatest messages ever delivered. Very difficult. You cannot conceive that there is no truth. What is the meaning of this master that there is no truth? Does he mean that there is no truth? No. He is saying that for you, who is a seeker, there can be no truth. Seeking always leads into the untrue. Only a non-seeking mind realizes that which is. Because whenever you seek, you have missed that which is. Seeking always moves into the future. Seeking cannot be here and now. How can you seek here and now? You can only be. Seeking is desire. Future enters, time comes in. And this moment, this here now is missed. And truth is here now. So if you go to a Buddha and ask, is there God? He will deny immediately, there is no God. Because if he says there is, he creates a seeker. If he says there is God, you will start seeking. How can you remain quiet when there is God to be sought? Then you will run. You have created another illusion. So Buddha says there is no God. Nobody understood him. People thought he is an atheist. He was not denying God. He was simply denying the seeker. But if he says there is God, the seeker is there. And seeker is the world. seeking is all that Maya is. For millions of lives you have been a seeker after this or that, this object, that object, of this world or that world, but a seeker. Now you are a seeker after truth. The master says there is no truth. He cuts the very ground of seeking. He pulls away the very ground where you are standing, where your mind is standing. He simply pushes you into the abyss. The inquirer says, then why these so many seekers are around you? If there is nothing to seek and there is no truth, then why this crowd? You must have been there, sitting around the master. Somebody comes to me and asks, say, there is no seeking. Nothing is to be sought because there is nothing to seek. He is bound to ask, then why are these people here? Why are these sannyasis here? What they are doing here? But the inquirer goes on missing the point. The master looked around and says, I don't see anyone. There is no one here. The inquirer goes on missing the point, because the intellect always goes on missing. He could have looked. This was the fact. There was no one. You can be in two ways. One, when you are, if you are seeking. If you are not seeking, you are not. Because seeking gives you the ego. Right this moment, if you are not seeking anyone, anything, you are not here. There is no crowd. If I am not teaching anything, because there is nothing to be taught, there is no truth to be taught. If I am not teaching anything, if you are not learning anything, who is here? Emptiness exists. And the bliss of pure emptiness. Individuals disappear. It becomes an oceanic consciousness. Individuals are there because individual minds. You have a different desire. That's why you differ from the neighbor. Desires create distinctions. I'm seeking something else. You are seeking something else. My path differs from yours, my goal differs from yours. That's why I differ from you. If I am not seeking, you are not seeking, goals disappear, paths are no more there, how the minds can exist? The cup is broken. And my tea flows into you and your tea flows into me. It becomes an oceanic existence. The master looked around and he said, I don't see anyone, there is no one. The intellect goes on missing, the inquirer says, then to whom you are teaching? If there is no one, then to whom you are teaching? And the master says, I have got no tongue, so how I can teach? He goes on giving hints to become alert, to look, but the inquirer is engulfed in his own mind. The master goes on hitting, hammering on his head. He is talking nonsense just to bring him out of his mind. And if you were there, you would have been convinced by the inquirer, not by the master. The inquirer would have appeared exactly right. This master seems to be mad, absurd.
He is talking and he says, there is no tongue, so how can I talk? He is saying, there is no body to me. How can I move? How can I talk? He is saying, look at me. I am without form. Look at me. I am not embodied. The body appears to you, but I am not that. So how I can talk? The mind goes on missing. This is the misery of the mind. You push, it again gathers itself. You hit, for a moment there is a shaking and trembling, and again it is established. Have you seen a Japanese doll? They call it Daruma doll. You throw it in whatsoever way, topsy-turvy, head upside down, whatsoever you do, the doll sits in a Buddha posture. The bottom part is so heavy, you cannot do anything. Throw it in any way, the doll sits again in a Buddha posture. The name Daruma comes from Bodhidharma. In Japan, Bodhidharma's name is Daruma. And Daruma used to say, this Bodhidharma used to say, that your mind is just like this doll. He used to have a doll. He will throw it, kick it, whatsoever you do, you cannot disturb the doll, it again. The bottom part is so heavy. You throw it upside down, it will be right side up. This master goes on pushing, a little shaking, and the doll sits again, misses the point. Finally, desperate, the inquirer says, I don't follow. I don't understand. And the ultimate hit, and the master says, I don't understand myself. I go on teaching you, knowing well there is nothing to be taught. That's why I can go on infinitely. If there is something to be taught, I would have finished already. Buddhas can go on and on and on, because there is nothing to be taught. It is an endless story. It never concludes. So I can go on and on. I will never be finished. You may be finished before my story ends, because there is no end to it. Somebody was asking me, you go on talking every day. I said, because there is nothing to be talked. Someday you will suddenly feel it, that I am not talking, that I am not teaching. You have realized. There is nothing to be taught, because there is no truth. What discipline I am giving to you? None. Because a disciplined mind is again a mind, even more stubborn, more adamant. A disciplined mind is more stupid. Go and see to the disciplined monks all over the world, Christian, Hindu, Jain. Whenever you see a man who is absolutely disciplined, you will find a stupid mind behind it. The flowing has stopped. And he is so much concerned with finding something that he is ready to whatsoever you say for him to do. If you say, stand on your head for hours, he is ready to stand on his head. It is because of desires. If God can be achieved only through standing on your head for hours. He is ready, but he must achieve. I am not giving you any achieving, any desiring. There is nowhere to reach and no, nothing to achieve. If you realize this, you have achieved this very moment. This very moment you are perfect. Nothing is to be done. Nothing is to be changed. This very moment you are absolute Brahma. That's why the master says, I don't understand it myself. Difficult to find a master who says, I don't understand it myself. Because a master must claim that he knows. Only then you will follow him. A master must not only claim that he knows, he must claim that only he knows, nobody else. And all other masters are wrong. Alone, I know, then you follow. He must be absolutely certain. Then you become a follower. The certainty gives you a feeling, here is the man, if we follow him, we will reach. I will tell you one story. It happened once, a so-called master was traveling. In every village he will go and he will declare, I have achieved. I have known the divine. If you want, come and follow me. People will say, there are many responsibilities. Someday we hope we will be able to follow you. They will touch his feet, give him respect, serve him. But nobody will follow because there are many other things first to be done before one goes to seek the divine. First things first. The divine is always the last. And the last never comes because first things are so infinite. They are never finished. But in one village, a madman. Madman he was. Otherwise who will follow? A madman, he said, right, you have found. The master hesitated a little looking at the madman. Because this man seems dangerous. He may follow and create trouble. But before the whole village, he couldn't deny. So he said, yes. The madman said, no. Initiate me. I will follow you to the very end. I want to realize the God myself. The so-called master became perturbed, but what to do? The madman started following him. He became a shadow. 1 year passed. The madman said, how far? How far is the temple? And he said, I am not in a hurry. But how much time will be needed? By this time, the master has become very uneasy and uncomfortable with this man. This madman will sleep with him. He will move with him. He became a shadow. And because of him, his certainty was dissolving. Whenever he will say in a village, follow me, he will become afraid because this man will look at him. I am following you, master, and still I have not reached. 2nd year passed, 3rd year passed, 6th year passed. And the madman said, we have not reached anywhere. You are simply traveling in villages. And you go on telling people that follow me and I am following you. And whatsoever you say, I do it. So you cannot say that you are not following the discipline. And the madman was really mad. So whatsoever was said, he will do. So the master couldn't deceive him that you are not doing well, that's why. So finally one night, The master said to him, "Because of you, I have lost my own path. Before I met you, I was certain. Now I am no more. You please leave me." You, whenever there is someone certain and you mad enough, you start following him. Can you follow this type of a man who says, "I myself don't know, I myself don't understand"? If you can follow this man, you will reach. You have already reached if you decide to follow this man. Because mind asks for certainty. Mind asks for knowledge. Mind asks for dogmatic assertions. If you can be ready to follow a man who says, "I don't understand myself," seeking has stopped. Because now you are not asking for knowledge. And one who is asking for knowledge cannot ask for being. Knowledge is rubbish. Being is life. When you stop asking for knowledge, you have stopped asking about the truth, because the truth is the goal of knowledge. When you don't inquire what is, rather you become so silent, so mindless, that which is revealed to you. I myself say to you, "I don't know." You cannot come across more ignorant man than me. There is no truth and there is no way. And I have not reached anywhere. I am simply here and now. If you can follow this ignorant man, your mind will drop. Because mind always follows knowledge. And when mind drops, there is no need to go anywhere. Everything is available, has been available, always. You have never missed it. Just because of your seeking, you cannot look at it. Your mind focused on the future, on the goal, cannot look. The truth surrounds you. You exist in it. Just like fishes exist in the ocean, you exist in the truth. God is not a goal. God is what is here and now. These trees, these winds blowing, these clouds moving, this sky, you, I, this is what God is. It is not a goal. Drop the mind and be divine. And God is not an object. It is a merger. Mind resists merger. Mind is against surrender. Mind is very cunning and calculating. This story is beautiful. You are the inquirer. You have come to me to inquire how to achieve truth. You have come to inquire how to achieve a state of mind which is blissful. You have come to acquire knowledge, to solve the mystery. And I repeat to you, there is no state of mind because there is no mind and there is no truth. So no seeking is allowed. All seeking is futile. Search as such is foolish. Seek and you will lose. Don't seek and it is there. Run and you will miss. Stop, it has been always there. And don't try to understand. Be. Understanding is superficial. Under the Bodhi tree, Buddha has not known more. You may be knowing more. Many scholars came to Buddha. They knew more than Buddha. Mahakashyap came. He was a great pandit. Sariputra came. He was a great pandit. When Sariputra came, 500 disciples came with him. Disciples of Sariputra. He was known all over the country. And when Sariputra said, I have come to you, give me that which is more than knowledge. Because knowledge I have got enough. Really, he may have known more than Buddha. He was a very deep penetrating scholar. He had known all the scriptures. He was a great Brahmin pandit. All the Vedas were on his tongue. He could have recited. But he asked Buddha, give me something that is more than knowledge. Knowledge I have got enough and I have fed up with it. And what Buddha said to Sariputta? He said, Andar, drop knowledge and that which is more will happen to you. A real master teaches you unlearning. It is never a learning. You have come to me, unlearn whatsoever you know. Please, drop it. Become ignorant. Become like a child. Only the heart of the child can knock at the doors of the divine. And only the heart of the child is heard. Your prayers cannot be heard. They are cunning. Only a child, only a heart which doesn't know can be. This is the meaning of this anecdote. And it is good for you because same is the case.
But when you just told us that you haven't got any teachers, last night also there was a great shock when you said that as far as you're concerned, your work is done, you're carrying your body for others. The young Jesus also said, wist ye not that I'm about my Father's business? What is or what was your business?
When I say my work is done, I mean I'm finished with any seeking. I mean I have come to realize that there is nothing to be realized, nothing to be known. nowhere to go. This moment is enough. This moment is eternity. My work is done when I say I mean. Now there is no desire. Desire creates business. You have to do something. Only then you will be happy. I am simply happy. It is not concerned with any doing. It is now uncast. That is the difference between happiness and bliss. Happiness is cast. You have a friend. You are happy. Your beloved has returned and you are happy. You have won the lottery and you are happy. Causes are there. They are beyond you. They are outside you. So your happiness comes from the outside. It is caused. And that which is caused cannot be forever. The beloved may go back. The friend may turn enemy. Friends turn enemy. Whatsoever you have achieved may be lost. That which is cast cannot be always there, cannot be eternal. When I say my work is done, I mean now my happiness is uncast. There is nothing that is helping me to be blissful. I am simply blissful. It cannot be taken away. You cannot uncast it if it is not cast. You cannot do anything to it. It is simply beyond. It cannot be destroyed. My business is finished. And then I say, my business is finished, I am finished, because I can exist only with the business. Then why I am here? This is one of the oldest questions. Buddha lived for 40 years after he became enlightened. After his business was finished, he lived for 40 years more. Many times it was asked, why you are? When the business is finished, you should disappear. It looks logical. Not for a single moment why Buddha should exist in the body. When there is no desire, how the body can continue? There is something very deep to be understood. When desire disappears, the energy that was moving in desire remains. It cannot disappear. Desire is just a form of the energy. That's why you can turn one desire into another. The anger can become sex, the sex can become anger. Sex can become greed. So see, whenever you find a very greedy person, he will be less sexual. If he is really perfectly greedy, he will not be sexual at all, he will be a brahmachari. Celibate, because the whole energy is moving into greed. If you see a very sexual person, you will always find he is not greedy, because nothing is left. If you see a person who has suppressed his sex, he will be angry. Anger will be just always ready. You can see in his eyes, in his face, he is just angry. The whole sex energy has become anger. That's why your so-called sadhus, your monks, are always angry. The way they walk, they show their anger. The way they look at you, they show their anger. Their silence is just skin deep. Touch them and they will become angry. Sex becomes anger. These are forms. Life is the energy. What happens when all desires disappear? Energy cannot disappear. Energy is indestructible. And ask the physicists. Even they say that energy cannot be destroyed. A certain energy was existing in Gautam Buddha when he became enlightened. That certain energy was moving in sex, in anger, in greed, in millions of ways. All forms disappeared. What became of that energy? Energy cannot go out of existence. When desires are not there, it becomes formless. It exists. Now, what is the function of it? That energy becomes compassion. You cannot be in compassion because you have no energy. All your energy is divided, sometimes in sex, sometimes in anger, sometimes in greed. And compassion is not a form. Only when your all desires disappear, that formless energy becomes compassion, karuna. So you cannot cultivate compassion. When you are desireless, compassion happens. Your whole energy moves into compassion. But this movement is very different. Desire has a motivation in it, a goal. Compassion is non-motivated. There is no goal to it. It is simply an overflowing energy. So when I say I exist for you, I don't mean that I am doing something to exist for you. No, I am not doing anything. Forms of desire have disappeared. Now the energy is there, without me. The energy is moving and overflowing. You can partake. You can feed on it. That's what Jesus means when he says, eat me. Let me become your blood. Let me become your food. This overflowing energy can become food to you, food of the eternal. I'm not doing anything when I say I exist for you. This is only language because there is no other language. I'm not doing anything. This is how it is happening. My forms have disappeared. Now a formless energy has remained. It will go on overflowing. Those who are wise can partake. Soon it will become bodiless also. First energy becomes formless, desireless. Then it becomes bodiless. Body has its own momentum. When one is born, a Buddha is born, he is born out of a communion of two bodies, the father, the mother. Then particular chromosomes, particular cells create his body. Those cells have an inbuilt momentum. That inbuilt momentum means that this body will exist for 70 years or 80 years. This is a body blueprint. For 80 years this body can exist. The body doesn't know, cannot know, that the soul that has entered is going to become enlightened. This house cannot know that the person who has entered in this house to live will become enlightened. And when this man becomes enlightened, even then this house will not know. This house will continue. It has its own life. Body has its own life. The body is completely unaware that a person has become enlightened. It continues. It has its own momentum, its own fuel. At the age of 40, Buddha becomes enlightened. The body has become irrelevant, but body continues. It will continue. It will complete its circle. It will be there for 80 years. And it is good, because these 40 years will be the overflowing years. And we will be able to know what enlightenment is. If Buddha disappears the very moment, there would have been no religion. If the body drops, Buddha becomes enlightened and the body drops, he would not have been even to tell what has happened. This is good. Existence is very compassionate. Buddha lives for 40 years more, not with any motivation, just the momentum of the body, and he goes on overflowing. This body also will disappear. The momentum has to be completed. I am not doing anything for you, because that too is sort of egoistic. Anybody thinking that he is doing something for you. Nobody is doing anything. It is happening. The form of desires disappears. Energy becomes compassion. The body has to complete its momentum. It has to complete its blueprint. This gap will be an overflowing. It is a feast. Not by me giving to you. It is a feast given by the whole. But language creates problems. Language is always dualistic. Language is always of this world. Language belongs to ignorance. Language belongs to desire. It carries all the connotations. It is very difficult to say anything about that which is not of this world. Either you have to be silent, but then even silence can be misunderstood. Or you have to use language. And every word is loaded. If I say, I am here for you, you can interpret it in such a way that it looks like a business, looks like a work. It is not. It is none of. It is simply an overflowing of love. And I am not the doer, because if you are the doer, there can be no love. Just a light is burning. you may find the path. The light is there. You may use it. It may become a flame for you. It may kindle a light within you. But that depends on you. I am simply here. You are invited, not by me, by the energy itself. Eat me as much as you can. Let me become part of you. Celebrate this occasion. Jesus' words again create problem. Words always create problem. Had Jesus been here, had he been here in the country of Upanishads and Buddha and Mahavir, the language would have been totally different. Jesus was born a Jew. He had to use Jewish language, myth, phraseology. So he says the work, the business that was given from my father to me is done. If he was here, he would have never talked about the Father. The Father is a Jew concept. It is good, beautiful, but very anthropomorphic. God is not the Father. God is not a person. And God is not in any sort of business. But Jews are businessmen. Their God is also a businessman, the super businessman. Controlling, managing, manipulating. And just like a businessman, you can seduce him, you can bribe him. He is a very real person. He will be angry if you don't surrender to him. He will throw you in the hell if you follow him. You will achieve the paradise, heaven, and heavenly pleasures. The whole language belongs to the world of profit business. But every language has its own problems. It is concrete and gives a very family type appearance to existence. Father, son, and the work. And you can reach to the Father through the Son. Jesus is using simply the language available. In this country, we have tried many linguistic patterns. Hindus use millions of types because Hinduism is not a religion, it is many religions. All types of religions exist into Hinduism. It is a crowd. It is a phenomenon itself. Every type that has ever existed in the world exists into Hinduism. This is a miracle. Even an atheist can be a Hindu. An atheist cannot be a Christian. And even an atheist can become enlightened. A Buddha is an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. He says there is no God. And even more mysterious, he says there is no soul. He says nothing exists. And he can become one of the incarnations of Hindu God. Really mysterious. This atheist, this Gautam Buddha, becomes the 10th avatar. He says there is no God, and Hindus say this man is a God incarnation. He is Bhagavan. Because Hindus say even denial is a way of assertion. Hindus say even to say no is to say yes. This is very mysterious. They say even to say there is no God, it is to say God in a negative way. And if God can be asserted in a positive language, why not in negative? Is a word. Nothing is also a word. And both are as much relevant as the other. Buddha says no. That no becomes absolute. Nothingness becomes the nature. Sankara says yes. That yes becomes absolute. That yesness, Brahma, becomes the source. But Hindus say both mean the same. Each language, each pattern of expressing it has its own benefits and its own dangers and pitfalls. I myself am inclined towards the negative. Hence so much emphasis on Zen masters. I really love these anecdotes. No mind, no truth, no understanding. Your desire is positive. If God is asserted in a positive way, your desire will not die. Your desire will turn towards God. And you will start desiring God. Negativity is to say no to all your desires, to all your objects of desire. When all desires disappear and all objects disappear, only you are left in your purity. That purity, that innocence, and the benediction of it is what I want you to enjoy with me. It is not a teaching. I am not a teacher. It is not a doctrine. It is just you can enjoy with me. I am available here. If you put down your mind aside, we can celebrate. I am in an inner dance. You can also become a partner in it. You may call this my business. my work is done as far as I am concerned, because I am done. Now the energy has become a compassion and overflowing. All those who really want to taste it are invited without any condition. You are not to give anything, you are simply to take. No discipline, no bargain, nothing is expected on your part. It is a gift. It has been always so. It will be always so. The ultimate bliss is always a gift. That's why we have been calling it a grace, a prasad. As the divine gives you out of his overflowing energy. I will tell you one story Jesus used to say. He repeated it many times. He must have loved this story. He said once it happened, a very rich man needed some laborers in his garden to work. So he sent a man to the marketplace. All the laborers that were available were called. They started working in the garden. Then others heard. They came in the afternoon. Then others heard. They came when the sun was just setting. But he employed all of them. And when the sun went down, he gathered all of them and paid them equally. Obviously, those who had come in the morning became disappointed. And they said, "What injustice? What type of injustice? What you are doing? We came in the morning and we worked the whole day. And these fellows came in the afternoon and just for 2 hours they worked. And few have come, just they have not worked at all. This is injustice." The rich man laughed and he said, "Don't think of others. Whatsoever I have given to you, is it not enough?" They said, "It is more than enough, but it is injustice. Why these people are getting who have just come?" The rich man said, "I give them because I have got too much. Out of my abundance I give them. You need not be worried about this. You have got more than you expected. Don't compare. I am not giving them because of their work. I give them because I have got too much. Out of my abundance." Jesus says, some work very hard to achieve the divine. Some come just in the afternoon. And some just when the sun is setting. And they all get the same divine. Those who had come in the morning must object. "This is too much. You just see, you have been meditating so much." And then suddenly someone comes just by the evening and becomes enlightened. "And you have been such a great ascetic. Just look. If all the ascetics reach and they see that sinners are sitting just by the side of the throne of the God, what will happen? They will become so sad. What is happening? These sinners, they never disciplined their lives. They never worked. And they are here. And we were thinking they would be in hell. There is no hell. There cannot be. How the hell can exist? Out of God's abundance, everything is heaven. It should be so. It must be so. It has to be so. Out of its abundance is heaven. There can be no hell. Hell is created by these ascetics because they cannot conceive sinners in heaven. They have to make compartments. They cannot think that you will be there. It is reported that one Hasid, a rabbi, Baal Sem, was asked by a woman. She was near about 70. Her husband was 80. And now, by and by, he was becoming a virtuous man. His whole life he was a sinner. So she had come to the rabbi to say, to give her thanks, that you have finally converted my husband, which was impossible. He has been a sinner his whole life, but now he is turning. So I am very much thankful to you. She has been always a pious lady. Never wavered, never went wrong. Always has been on the right track. And always thinking that heaven is just waiting for her to welcome. And always knowing well that this husband of hers is going to hell. So she said to Baal Sem that, can we hope now that even my husband will reach to heaven? Baal Sem laughed and said, greater the sinner, greater the saint. The woman became sad and she said, then why didn't you tell it before? You should have told it to me 40 years before. Greater the sinner, greater the saint. This woman will be in such a hell if she finds her husband in heaven. These so-called virtuous people have created hell. Otherwise, out of divine abundance, hell cannot exist. Saints will receive because they have come in the morning. Sinners will receive, they may have come in the evening. And everyone is going to receive, it is a gift. I am here not as a business now, but as a gift. But you are so afraid and fearful. You can understand business. You know the terms. You cannot understand a gift. You don't know the terms. That's the problem. You can understand if you have to fulfill some condition. If nothing is required of you, you are simply at a loss. But all expectations belong to mind. All disciplines belong to mind. All so-called sin and so-called saintliness belong to mind. When there is no mind, there is no sinner, no saint. And the gift simply sours on you. Enough for today.